You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley and Shaka Hislop. We'll kick things off with Shaka's former team. We were in action against Spurs on Tuesday. It finished one apiece. We'd see Johnson open the scoring early on for Postecoglou's side. Zuma, though, with the equaliser. So in the end, the spoils are shared. Just taking a look at what that means then for the table. Newcastle sitting eighth, but it's all about Spurs, isn't it? It looks like fifth should be enough for a Champions League place, given the new coefficient, as they currently sit 9 points clear of Manchester United. We welcome in Jurgen Klinsmann to the show. Jurgen, overall, I think it's a draw, a fair result in this game.
Yeah, I think so. A draw is a fair result. I mean, Tottenham had majority of the game. I mean, 70% possession, controlled it most of the time. But West Ham, defensive display was very, very positive, was good, was strong. Very few chances, unfortunately, for such a big derby. You know, you wish there were more chances. Antonio, he had the chance then with the breakaway after the foul not given on Madison. That could have been the game changer. That could have been the win for West Ham. But overall, I think a tie is fair. I mean, Spurs overall look okay. They look good in the race for a Champions League spot. It's been so far, overall, I think, a very positive season for Tottenham.
Yeah, positive season. 1-1 against West Ham, not the end of the world.
Yeah, I wouldn't be looking over my shoulder too much if you've watched Liverpool FA Cup quarter-final apart. If you've watched Man United in the league, for the most part, I wouldn't be too worried. I would call this flat.
Yeah.
Lively early from Spurs, particularly Werner. And I think they missed a trick there because he was quiet. Apart from the first 20 minutes, Timo Werner was quite quiet. And I think they missed a trick because he had the beating of Soufal when they had him one-on-one. He absolutely had the beating of it. But they didn't utilise that one-on-one, that the isolation of those two players and letting him run it at the West Ham right back. So that was something that didn't really work for Tottenham. He left him on, by the way, took Madison off, which was a little bit of a surprise. But yeah, I was a little disappointed. I wasn't disappointed with West Ham because that's kind of what West Ham are. Mm. I was a little bit disappointed with Spurs today in the final third, and I just felt it was all a bit flat, yeah.
Talk us through the West Ham goal, Shaq, because I feel like we've seen this before, haven't we? With Vicario being exposed, No protection. He seems to be vulnerable for bullying from the attackers.
And I think that's kind of come to the fore more of late as well, where opponents, and certainly West Ham did it a lot on the day, crowded that six-yard box. So even as you look here, and certainly during commentary, the comment was made that Zuma heads this from 4 yards out, but Vicario can't come for it because there's so many bodies in the box.
Right.
And I think opponents recognising that physically he isn't the strongest, so he's not going to just knock people out the way in coming for crosses. So if you put bodies in there, he's pinned to the line. And then when you're a West Ham and you've got somebody like Ward-Prowse who you can call on for in terms of deliveries, every set piece all of a sudden takes on a greater prominence, especially when you're up against a team like Spurs and a goalkeeper like Vicario.
Ward-Prowse whipping them in from the right, and he is one of the best exponents of the set piece in the Premier League, without a doubt. And you've got Jared Bowen whipping them in from the other side. Now, this is a weak point for Tottenham. Now, Mikel Antonio was the player that planked himself in front of the goalkeeper. And if you watch that clip there, he never moved. Mm-hmm. He wasn't trying to block. He wasn't trying to... He just stood his ground. And he's a big lad, don't get me wrong. He just stood his ground and he didn't move. And what you're going to see with Tottenham is all the teams trying to whip balls in under the crossbar.
Yeah.
They're going to try and whip them in. They're going to try and whip them in flat. They're going to try and get bodies in there. And by the way, it wasn't just that corner that was the goal. Every corner kick in this match that West Ham had, Tottenham, not just Vicario, defensively, I think there's something there that they're going to have to work on, because everyone, it was a, more or less a West Ham head that got there first.
As a coach, Jürgen, how do you address that vulnerability?
Now, this is a an attitude issue. I mean, set pieces are big, obviously. You know, almost every third goal comes out of a set piece, especially in big tournaments, competitions. And you have to train that, obviously, and I'm sure that all the teams train it and try to kind of memorize their runs inside out, especially the offensive ones. But this is, first and foremost, it is an attitude topic. You know, you got to somehow be able to put more adrenaline in your brain for that quick second and attack the ball and know where your opponent is. And you got to be alert. And obviously, you know, everybody watches everybody, meaning, you know, you see then if your opponent is vulnerable there, you see if one or two players maybe here and there lose concentration, and you then focus on these little weak points of your opponent. And as Greg said, yeah, there's an issue with Spurs that in that moment they're vulnerable. And you felt that. You felt it throughout the game. Every time West Ham had a set piece, had a corner kick, you know, it was kind of a little bit burning. You know, the crowd picks up on it. The fans smell it too. And so they were dangerous right there. And no surprise they scored with that corner kick.
If you look, they're not... Usually, when you look at teams, you have front guys that you can bring back to defend.
Right.
Look at today, Son, Maddison, Werner.
Johnson isn't big.
Brennan Johnson. Mm-hmm. You know, these normally, you know, you've got two or three in your front line or your forward players that you can bring back. And they're really good at heading. They're really good. Some of the best set-piece defenders I ever played with were actually strikers. They used to come back and were brilliant at attacking the ball.
Yeah.
But Spurs don't really... I mean, if Richarlison plays and Kulusevski starts, it's certainly two bigger players. But in that current team, it's not the biggest physical Tottenham side.
So defensively, from a goalkeeper's point of view, how are you dealing with this, Shaq?
The issue for Vicario, as I mentioned, is he simply isn't strong enough in his upper body to kind of bump players out of the way. So...
Unlike you, Shaq.
I'm not one to toot my own horn, Dan. But
you're just a specimen these
look
days.
Look at it. It's a temple.
The other thing is, because Spurs have to get so many bodies back as well, it makes it all the more difficult for him. But then, without those defenders there, West Ham aren't going to move anybody. They're going to keep those same three or four in the six-yard box and challenge Vicario to come and come over the top of a Michael Antonio or a Zuma or whoever else it may be. And I don't see him doing that either. So it really is a hiding to nothing for Vicario.
Jürgen, can I ask you a complicated tactical question, if you don't mind? Did you like playing in the rain?
Oh, I love to play in the rain. Absolutely. Yeah, because it makes it everything happens faster, quicker. And so I enjoyed always playing in the rain. But I would like to add there something to the set piece discussion is communication is a very, very important tool. You know, you need a leader or two leaders in your defense, in your shape, overall shape. If it's the goalkeeper and your center back or whoever it is there in the box, you need somebody to raise the energy, you know, in defensive set pieces. And it looked to me like they're, you know, Tottenham was too quiet. They were too quiet. They were just expecting the balls and then, you know, let's fix it. And this is an important issue that we always discuss with the players. You know, when you're in set pieces, especially defensive set pieces, somebody has to talk. Somebody has to wake up everybody around him to make sure that everybody's on the same page. And I was missing that a little bit today.
And of course, if you're marking zonally, then you're open to Zuma coming from where he came from. Because you're not, when you're marking zonally, you don't put somebody around by the back post. You just don't do it. So you have to give somebody the choice or the job to go and do that. So that's another thing you could look at. But that's not the reason it's 1-1 in this game. Tottenham just didn't offer enough going forward.
Right, why not?
I don't know if, you know, Maddison, I just don't know if he's quite at his best at the moment, and Heung-Min Son was trying stuff, but it was all very tight. When Tottenham got to the edge of the box, particularly in the second half, it was all very congested. You know, Son was trying to drop a shoulder and get it on his left foot and whip it in. And West Ham, in all fairness, were getting bodies back and doing what they do. Defended very well on the edge of their own box. And I don't, and that's why I was a little bit frustrated not seeing particularly Werner being left alone. And if it was me playing and I see that a wide man has the beating of a fullback early on, whenever I get that ball, given the right opportunity, I'm stuffing it into Werner, and I'm not saying stay away from him. Don't overlap him. Don't go out there. Don't crowd it. Get it to his feet. Let him run at the defender. And once I saw that he had the beating of him early, and he did, inside and outside, by the way. He had the pace down the outside. He could then, a defender starts to overcover, he could cut inside on his right foot. But for some reason, Tottenham stopped doing that. And it wasn't because West Ham really changed anything. It was because, you know, when Werner was getting it, he was passing it back. And I just felt that today, with the congestion that West Ham have, if you're asking why Tottenham never created as much as they should have done with the possession, is because there's nothing wrong with good old-fashioned wide play. We saw it in the Arsenal City game at the weekend. There was not a tougher defence to break down in Europe this season than that Arsenal back four. And you've got to find width. And when you find width and good crosses, that is not obsolete in this game, because that's an alternative. And Tottenham didn't have that today.
Spurs, no doubt about it, will have a big hand to play in the title race between now and the end of the season, given they've got to play City, Arsenal and Liverpool. Given that running and given what they have to face with 8 games to go, is there any chance you think we could see Manchester United come in and take that 5th place, which it looks like will be also a Champions League spot?
Are you just trying to shoehorn a Man United battering into this show?
No, because
if you're a Man United fan and you watch them against Liverpool, you go, oh, give me hope.
Right.
Lord, give me strength. Can we do this every week? And the answer is, they cannot.
Right.
Right. They can get up for some of the big games, some of them, and yet it was back to basics, it was back to normality at Brentford when really and truly it was daylight robbery, the fact that they even come out with a point. So there's nothing in their consistency levels that would suggest to me that they're going to put enough of a run together to catch, say, Tottenham.
Right.
Nothing. No. You can't keep offering up the amount of chances. And let's not forget, in this great win against Liverpool, and it was, that Liverpool were very profligate in that game.
Yeah, second half.
Very wasteful. Very wasteful. So you can't keep doing that. And for me, watching this United side, it's about hanging on, trying to nick the odd result and hoping your goalkeeper or the other team don't finish in the final third like they should. That's not a policy to get in Champions League football. It's just not. I don't see them doing it. I don't even think they've got a chance of doing it, to be honest, playing like that.
Ange Postecoglou, of course, has won a lot of fans, given what he's done with Spurs since taking over at the start of the season. So much so, Jurgen, there is genuine conversation about maybe him taking over from Jurgen Klopp as the next Liverpool manager. How would you see that fit? Do you think that would work? Do you think that's something that could work for both sides?
No, I don't see that coming. I don't see Ange going away from Spurs. I think he starts a very exciting project. He's started very, very well. You know, Spurs was up on top in the beginning of the season, but we all knew it's not going to last forever. So I think the Spurs fans, they all enjoyed it for the first couple of months to look at the table. I think reality is right there where they are right now, spot 4 or 5, that's the fight that Spurs has to fight right now, making sure they get into the Champions League for next season. That would be a tremendous positive outcome of his first year at Spurs. Whoever wants to follow in the footsteps of Jurgen Klopp will have a very, very difficult task, will have a very difficult job. And I look back a little bit at that transition, you know, when Sir Alex Ferguson left, obviously the helm there at Man United, and David Moyes stepped in. I still believe that David Moyes was the right manager for Man United at that time, absolutely. But he was not giving the time. You know, he was not even given a year. I think whoever steps now into the footsteps of Jurgen Klopp needs to get at least a chance to be there for 2-3 years, at least 2 years, at least 2 seasons, you know, to kind of slowly make things the way he wants it to do and shape the team the way he wants to do. But it's going to be very, very, very difficult. So I'm not surprised that Xabi Alonso, you know, said that he will remain with Leverkusen for the time being for another year, which is fantastic news for Leverkusen, obviously. But he knows that following on Jurgen Klopp at Anfield is pretty much impossible. It will take 2-3 years for that transition to happen.
Even if Liverpool wanted Postecoglou, and there are others, Tottenham have one of the most stubborn...
Mr. Levy.
Chief executives that runs a club for Mr. Lewis and his investment group. He's never, ever, ever, I would imagine now, going to let go of something that I don't think even he believed. Because let's not forget, Postecoglou was not even in the top three for getting that job, right? So he stumbled on something. I know Spurs fans go, oh, we're not quite, oh, yeah, we should have been... Listen, look where you were, look where you are. Look at the way you were playing, the style of football, look how you're playing now. It was never going to be perfect, and it's always going to take time. So Levy has stumbled on a manager who has played the most exciting football at Tottenham for years, right? That's fact. And he is not going to let that go because the alternatives out there are limited.
Yeah.
You know, then he would have to go and chase some... If Postecoglou was to go to Liverpool, then he's going to go to Brighton for De Zerbi, something like that. These things are not going to be easy. So even if Liverpool wanted him, which I have no idea whether they do or not, but this Alonso decision has set a bit of a domino chain of panic setting in with who's going to get the Barca job, who's going to get that job, who's going to get the Bayern job, who's going to get the Liverpool job, how's it all going to fit? I don't see Levy even entertain... Don't forget, he turned down some big money for Harry Kane. He was very stubborn on Harry Kane right to the end for many a year. He's not going to let... I don't think, Shaq, he's not going to let...
I agree. Listen, in terms of fit, I think Postecoglou is
as
close to Jurgen Klopp as you will get, both in terms of how his teams play and in terms of his personality. How he manages the players, how he manages the fans, which is a big part of Jurgen Klopp's appeal, certainly, to Liverpool fans. But while I say all that Ange Postecoglou absolutely is the perfect fit, I'm with Craig in that I don't think anybody is looking forward to picking up the phone to Daniel Levy to try to convince him to let go of Postecoglou. I think that's a pretty short conversation that ultimately you'd be frustrated in. And then all of a sudden, now you have to cast your net a whole lot wider.
It's a good job Ancelotti stayed at Real Madrid for another couple of years, isn't it? Well, can you imagine now, the merry-go-round then?
Definitely.
Barca, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, you know, Liverpool, all looking for Man United. I mean, they
right, yeah.
You know, what might save Ten Hag? Not want to go back to Man United, but I'm sort of seem to have progressed there. if everybody else is looking for this next best thing to
don't forget Barcelona as well.
Well, that's what I mean, but you know, so that could be Ten Hag's saviour, that these other managers, these other clubs go for the best of the best of what's available and around, and Man United then have nowhere really to go. So that could save him.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Just a reminder then how things stand for Newcastle. They sit eighth in the table. They are 15 points off fourth. Of course, many expect them to finish top four once again this season. It just has not worked out for the second half of this campaign.
No, it hasn't. And listen, I think early on in the season, we blamed a lot of injuries, and rightly so, for Newcastle's stumbles. But even after Newcastle started getting players back fit, they just haven't been able to find that rhythm once again. And the game today kind of summed it up. Dominant over Everton. Everton had a short 10-minute spell where they were good, but that was about it. And even so, other than hitting the post, Dubravka didn't have anything out of the ordinary to do. And then you just go and concede as a really soft penalty, as you did there with Dummett and Young. And that has kind of summed up Newcastle's season in that when you play well, you somehow find ways to shoot yourself in the foot.
I'd like to see Eddie, to be honest with you. I'm not in the, at the moment, I'm not in the he needs to go, right? I'd like to see Eddie Howe in Newcastle regroup, get to the end of the season, assess the squad, dabble in the transfer market like they may, or they have got some financial fair play issues they have to deal with, and then go again. And if he's struggling and he doesn't pick it up, then he's in trouble. Mm. But what are you laughing at?
Because I'm going to say something that's going to make you angry.
No, because I already knew before I started about the Eddie Howe that you, because I'm already a step ahead of you, yep, saying, what's the difference?
Well, I'd say there's an argument to say that he's had a worse season than Ten Hag.
I'll tell you what the difference is, and Shaka just touched on it. Dominant. A lot of the Newcastle performances have been, they've passed the eye test, a lot of them. There's not much. So we can put all the stats away. If you're a stats nerd, then that's all you go on. Sod off.
But isn't it about winning? Isn't it about points
in
the end? No, it is.
But there's an eye test as well. And the eye test for me is when I'm watching Man United and I look at, and by the way, they spent a lot more than Newcastle. There's no doubt about that. When I look at Man United against teams, you're watching the game, you go, wow, how are they not competing? How are they giving up so many chances? How the hell are they picking these points up playing like that? Newcastle have had some moments like that, but generally their football has been better, right? For example, the thrashing they gave of PSG in the Champions League, the beating of Man City in the Carabao Cup, so that the beating of Man United with Newcastle reserves at Old Trafford. So I think there is a semblance that, certainly a way of thinking for me, that Eddie Howe, I think, personally, is a better manager in England than Ten Hag. I just not seen enough. I've seen enough from Howe's teams over the last 2 years to think, yeah, he can get them playing. Mm-hmm. He can get them mixing it with the big guys, even toe-to-toe. There's nothing I've seen, really, apart from the odd occasion, from Ten Hag's teams that makes me think that it's going to be any different next year. And that's the difference at the moment. The eye test for Man United, for me, watching them, is, you saw it at the weekend, the Brentford game, Bournemouth at home. You know, there's been multiple games, you go, how are they allowing these poorer teams in the Premier League to outplay them and often embarrass them? And for me, that I get what you're saying, and Man United fans have been looking, going, oh, yeah, it's FC, it's Man United bites. It's not. It is not. When you spend the amount of money they have spent, and I know they've had injuries as well, you cannot be dominated at Old Trafford and beaten 3-0 or 4-0 by Bournemouth. You can't allow Brentford in the first half to create the most chances ever in 45 minutes since they've been keeping those stats in the Premier League. That's telling you something's not right.
I think also in Eddie Howe's favour is when you put into perspective where those teams were when both managers took over. Eddie Howe took over a team that was rooted at the bottom of the Premier League, and while last season exceeded every single expectation, and the hope was to build on that, just in terms of assessing where their teams are right now and the difference between success and failure, you have to consider how far Eddie Howe has brought this Newcastle.
We'll never convince the people that watch this show anyway that we don't hate Man United. It's never going to happen.
Away from the anti-Manchester United ways, it's a big point for Everton, of course, as they scrap to avoid relegation once again this season. Meanwhile, a huge victory for Nottingham Forest, defeating Fulham by 3-1, means that 3 points separate them. Luton, Burnley could manage a 1-1 draw against Wolves.
Look at Chelsea.
Yeah, I know. Let's not start on Chelsea. Sheffield United. Luton and Sheffield United, of course, in action against Liverpool and Arsenal over the next couple of days. Plenty more content over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to go over to ESPN FC and subscribe.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Right then, for the first time this season, Liverpool are the favourites to win the Premier League. Obviously, after that, come from behind victory against Brighton, but I suppose more importantly, that 0-0 draw between Manchester City and Arsenal. Jurgen Klinsmann back with us. Jurgen, who's going to win the league?
Well, I really wish Jurgen Klopp to win the league, absolutely. You know, I mean, he obviously now announced that he will leave and this long and wonderful adventure with Liverpool. And I hope he's gonna leave with the title. I think he would deserve it. I know it's going to be a race until the very last day. It's going to be dramatic. And the other two teams, you know, have a big say in that. But I personally just hope that Jurgen Klopp gets awarded for all he did the last 8 years at Anfield.
It'd be with the fairy tale endings. First time you've been on, isn't it, since everything happened at the weekend? Have you changed your pick as to who's going to win it?
Well, my pick was always Man City.
Yes. That's why I asked if you're going to change it.
Help.
I can't offer any, Craig.
I still think there's a lot of hurdles to get over for Liverpool.
OK.
I do agree with Jurgen. I think if you're a neutral and you're not in the sort of bitter, I hate that team sort of camp, it would be an unbelievable story. And by the way, I think anything better than winning the league when he did and winning the Champions League, because they've had the Asian Cup, the African Cup of Nations to deal with, and Matip's out with Tsimikas was out, Alexander's out, Andy Robertson was out, Konate was out, there was only Van Dijk at one point, and Alisson. So to be where they are, right, to be where they are with what... And there have been a lot of injuries this season for clubs like Man United and Newcastle and Tottenham. But to me, Arsenal and Man City, it's not been too bad. Whereas Liverpool have...
So are you getting to a point here? Like, who's going to win the league?
Well, you really didn't think I was going to go down all those games, did you?
Well, no, I didn't. I just wanted you to answer the question, as opposed to say Liverpool brilliantly to be top of the table.
See, I finally, after years, I finally show a sort of nice side and you shoot me down.
Dan accused me of Liverpool TV yesterday because...
I'm going to stick with the side that I said was the biggest threat to Man City from day one. And you know who that is.
You're going to go with Arsenal?
I'm sticking with the side. If it's not going to be Man City...
Wow.
I'm sticking with the side that I said was the biggest threat to City, in my opinion. Now, some of the boys thought it was Liverpool. I personally have always felt it was Arsenal. I was disappointed at the weekend they didn't get on the front foot more, but they made a conscious decision. And by the way, I was talking about earlier, that defence, particularly those two centre-halves, were outstanding.
Right.
But others are going to have to falter now. That's the problem with that tactic. That the 3 points for them would have painted a different picture.
Right.
So I'm going to go... Yeah, I'm going to go if it's not... I'm going to... Jesus, God, man. Stop waffling, Arsenal.
Arsenal to win the league.
Arsenal to win the league.
Wow, okay.
Well, you don't think it's going to be City, do you? You think...
I think City aren't the City that we think they are.
Right, so why... So that's a 50-50 call then?
Well, not necessarily.
I'm going to go for Arsenal to win... Yeah, Arsenal.
Jürgen, obviously, Arsenal went in and played very different football that maybe we normally associate with them. Only, what, 27-28% possession. How difficult is it to pull off what they did over 90 minutes against Manchester City? Or how disappointing is it that they didn't go, as Craig say, and actually go for the win?
Well, if that was the match plan, then you get away with a tie, then the match plan worked out. You know, now is it nice to watch? No. Is it frustrating then for the opponent, Man City? Yes, very, very frustrating. Because when you bunker in and you park the bus, then you have to find a way somehow kind of to break through and score a goal. And you maybe rely on set pieces or here and there across. You need to go kind of old school in a certain way. So, but it worked out. They got their point that they wanted. And they frustrated Manchester City. And so be it. Is it fun to watch for us? Neutral ones? Neutral. No.
If you go to Liverpool and draw, which they did, wasn't a great game either, by the way, and you go to City, play the way they did, and I don't know what the stats were, but David Raya had, like, you know, could have sat and had a cappuccino, really.
One shot on target.
Why are you laughing?
I don't know why a cappuccino, but there you go.
Cup of tea. Cup of tea. What is it, man? Whatever your drink is, I don't know what it is.
Your drink of choice.
But the one thing I would say, if you go to those two sides, you play those two sides at home and win, Liverpool and City, you draw with them away, you don't win the league, it's going to be tough on you.
Right.
And the other side of it is, if Arsenal don't win the league, there are games, they will look back and think, well, we threw that one away, or we didn't do that, or we didn't... But if the question is, did Arsenal leave anything on the table at the Etihad, the answer is yes. Because they're way better than what we saw.
Right.
But they made a decision that if they could nick something, that was going to be fine. But that's only fine come the end of the season if you're on top of the league. Because then you look back and say, you know, what did we lose? We should have gone at Man City. Because we never saw anything in Saka.
No.
You know, and he decided to play Jesus and he worked hard defensively, but didn't offer a lot going forward. And, you know, Havertz was sort of, you know, working hard, but not doing a lot. And so they left a lot of what has been really great about Arsenal this season. They left it on the table. They made a conscious decision. And if Arteta wins the league at the end, that'll be the right thing to do and the right thing to have done. If they don't, I think they'll look back and say, do you know what? Looking at what Liverpool did to Man City at Anfield, and they crawled away with a point, City. We could have gone there and taken 3 points, but we chose to do it a different way. And only time will tell whether that was the right tactic to go to the Etihad with.
Arteta was asked about this in the press conference ahead of the clash against Luton. This is what he's had to say about those tactics. Leave your ego aside and your ideology aside and do what you have to do to win the game. I thought the team was mentally really strong and clever the way they did it, Shane.
I think that says that Arteta intended to come and defend. I probably expect...
You could switch out the word win for draw, could you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Or more to the point, keep it nil-nil to about 75th minute, and then all of a sudden, now you start taking a couple of chances, maybe as City get a little bit desperate or a little bit frustrated. But certainly the intention of Arsenal going into that game was to defend, as they've done all season long, every single body chipping in, including Jesus and Saka as needed. And then as the game drew on and you got to later stages of the game, can you nick one later on? With the introduction of the Trossard or Martinelli later on, does that open things up? Does that provide opportunity for Havertz, as we've seen Arsenal do time and time again during the course of the season, in scoring late on? So that clearly was the tactic. Get to 75, 80 minutes at 0-0 and let's see what we can nick from here. But at the very worst, we come out of this with a point. Job done.
The only thing I would say, the only team in recent times to obviously topple Man City for the Premier League has been Liverpool, right? In the COVID times. And maybe there's been the odd game that City have pushed them back and had periods of domination. But Jurgen Klopp has never succeeded in taking a backward step against any team. Now, sometimes it goes against you and you push back by the opponent's brilliant, dazzling play. But Klopp's Liverpool side have never, ever gone into a game and decided to completely change the way they go about it. Arsenal did. And to me, yes, and everything he said in his press conference was right. They were absolutely rock solid. But that's not what Arsenal have been about this year. Arsenal have been about pressing everybody, throttling them in their own half and then playing their own excellent football. He sort of took a backward step at it at the weekend and said, do you know what, I don't think we're good enough to do that, so we're going to go the opposite way. And as I say, if it comes to the end of the season and they're second or third, it's one of the games that we'll sit back when we're analysing all this and we'll say, well, maybe they should have did that different there and did that different there. That's where this is a time issue.
But then because of how the whole game played out, well, certainly Arsenal's change of style, you can't help but wonder if it's a kind of master against student type mentality from Arteta, which I don't think Arsenal need to take.
Right.
Arsenal are good enough to go toe-to-toe with anybody in this league. But I'm with Craig in that I don't understand. And while, yes, it got your point, and maybe when you leave London, you're thinking if we get back here with a point, we'll take it. Or job well done.
But that's not really the attitude of a team going for the title, is it?
And I just don't. And so it's difficult. In seeing Arsenal this season, it's difficult to explain it. But again, you understand the relationship between those two managers, given that Arteta was groomed under Pep, and you just can't help but wonder.
What do you think, Jürgen?
Well, I think it's going to be super interesting now to see what tactical approach Arteta will have playing Bayern Munich in the Champions League. You know, because this is a big team as well, and obviously they have a little bit their problems this season. Leverkusen is running away, winning the German Championship, and now you have this matchup, Arsenal and Bayern Munich in the Champions League. And there's a situation for Arteta now to prove a point, you know, what his philosophy is, what his approach is in the real big, big game. And I'm curious to see that coming up. That will be fantastic to watch.
Jürgen, what did you make of the criticism that some threw at Erling Haaland after that game?
Nothing at all. I think, you know, when a striker is not scoring, maybe he misses a couple of chances, there's always criticism. It's normal. And Erling knows that. It's for me, it's not a big deal. And there are periods, you know, throughout a season where you have your little up and downs. You know, you're not a machine all the time. So when he goes through a stretch of a couple of games, maybe not scoring, being the kind of usual Haaland that we see all the time, for me, that's normal. It's human. It's just fine, you know. At the end of the year, you can look at his numbers, and his numbers will always be exceptional. Throughout, you know, obviously the club season, and then also with his national team. For me, it's not a big deal when he has an off game here and there.
Roy Keane obviously made headlines by saying that he's like a League Two player.
Well, I don't think it's any surprise that some of Erling Haaland's all-round game are certainly... there's certainly room for improvement. But Erling Haaland is about physicality and goals. When it comes to all-round play, and I'm not suggesting he's a better player, he's a worse goal scorer, but he's not on the same planet, say, as a Harry Kane. You know, in terms of his all-round link-up play,
right. I mean,
Harry Kane could drop off and play passes like a number 10. He can play 50, 60, 70-yard ping passes round the corner, you name it. Karim Benzema, drifting around the pitch when he was at Real Madrid, flicking little balls and, you know, linking the play up. That's not Erling Haaland. And so when City are struggling a little bit in the final third, when he's a little bit off form. And don't forget, he's playing against arguably the two best centre-backs in the Premier League, who did a brilliant, brilliant job at the weekend. They were unbelievable. How William Saliba... Somebody needs to send a tape of this, that game, Deschamps. To Deschamps and say, please, please tell me why this guy doesn't play and is not going to play at the Euros. He's got to play at the Euros. So there's that factor as well. But does Erling Haaland a lot of times have a bad touch? Yeah. Does his link-up play the best? No. So these are all things that we knew before the game. When his finishing starts to get poor, and it has been a few times this year, thinking back, I think it was the Chelsea game and others, that's when he's going to be criticised, because he needs the goals to keep those numbers up, as Jurgen was saying, because lots of his other game need polishing. As good as this guy is, there are parts of his game that I don't think he's ever going to be the best at. But as for scoring goals at the moment, he is one of the best.
I understand criticism, and it's hard to disagree with a lot of it, given what you saw against Arsenal. But let's be honest, an average player doesn't score 52 goals in a season. At the best of times, if an average player, everything goes right, you don't get to 52. Nor do you have the kind of records that Erling Haaland had even before his arrival at Manchester City in both the Bundesliga and the Champions League. But then to him dropping off and providing more link-up play, there were times last season where he wasn't getting a lot of service, and you saw him dropping back. And Pep Guardiola gave him instruction, no, I don't want you back in my midfield. You go and play up on the shoulders of defenders. So he doesn't want him coming back there. So he's doing what's asked of him. But I just can't help that while he spent a lot of times on the sideline injured, I can't help but feel that has affected him. Mm-hmm. Because... as I said, you cannot be an average player and score 52 goals in the Premier League, ever. So then just give him some of the little things, that chance later on where he could have squared, I think it was to Rodri, and he completely whiffed at it. Those are things that are just so uncharacteristic of Erling Haaland, that I wonder that if it isn't a knock-on of some of those injuries that he's had to deal with.
But he I think people forget that... he is still relatively young.
23.
And he's learning. He's still learning parts of the game. When Jurgen was playing up front for all these big teams and the national team, it's learning how to use your body as a striker and how to lean into defenders. And when a defender gets tight, too tight to you, how to spin them. And all these sort of things that you get better at. And if you don't get better at, then it's a problem. But it's not just about the goal-scoring aspect of it. It's about... If the two centre-halves want to get in a fight with me as a striker, what do I do?
Right.
Because if I get in a fight back with them and it becomes a wrestling match, it's taken away from the rest of my game. So I've got to find a way of dragging these people into different positions or not getting into a wrestling match in the middle of the park and making it difficult for myself. And I kind of felt when balls were getting played up to his feet or his chest... that's what was happening, that the guys, one of those two centre-halves was already tight to him, and he struggled in that department, but that doesn't take away... put it one way. There's not a team in the world, club team in the world, that he doesn't walk into and they go, we'll have him.
Jurgen, what do you make of what the boys are saying?
No, absolutely. I totally agree with Craig there. When you battle constantly two centre-backs, and they're... both all the time, all over him. Sometimes even the six drops back, and then they build a triangle around him. This eats you up. This makes you frustrated. And then suddenly you get your chances. You make the right runs, and you're just out of breath. You are just tired a second, and then you don't convert that thing, and that eats you even more up. So at the age of 23, where he's at right now, at the age of 23, is unbelievable. It's incredible what this guy has already done in the game and will continue to do. But he will mature. He will get stronger. He will get calmer inside of him. He will kind of fight these fights against the center backs differently by time. And he will mature. And this is something normal. But at the end of the day, he still provides all these numbers. He scores these goals, this incredible amount of goals, and carries our entire nation on his shoulders. You know, whenever he goes on international break, I mean, Norway is just waiting for Erling Haaland. Oh, just be the, please make us win these games somehow. Get us somewhere. You know, and this is not easy for a kid 23 years of age. So he's done tremendously until now, and he will do even better in the future.
You know, I thought a big part of the problem was, and I mentioned this to you, was, and Arsenal had it as well when they played Porto in the Champions League, that how Porto disrupted the game. And I thought Arsenal did a pretty good job of that, particularly in the first half. But for me, very early on, I thought it was in City players' heads. They were chasing Anthony Taylor every time he didn't give a yellow card. And listen, this was a huge game, and I thought Anthony Taylor was absolutely right to try and let a lot of challenges go and let it flow, unless there was a dangerous challenge, which there wasn't, certainly not early on. But all I ever saw, and by the way, De Bruyne was one of the biggest culprits. So you had two of their best players, De Bruyne and Rodri, every time remonstrating and chasing the referee around. That's as big a problem as Haaland had fighting two centre-halves.
Right.
Because all of a sudden, and then the crowd get into it as well, and I felt that Arsenal did a great job of really getting under this, although they didn't play particularly well offensively. They got under City's skin, and I think that kind of put City off their stride a little bit. And I'm surprised Anthony Taylor didn't book more City players for... There was one or two of them, by the way, behind his back, got away with the old, you know, that sign, which is now a bookable offence, so... I felt they were off the stride at the week. There's something not quite right this year, at this moment in time, with this City side. It's not bad, but it is not dazzling.
Jurgen, one last point on this. I was wondering if you would ever do what Pep Guardiola did at the end of the game with Jack Grealish.
Well, I think so, yeah. Why not? I mean, obviously, they know each other really well. And the level of relationship and how they respect each other, you know, that's grown over the years. And if you then have a bit of an emotional go at something that you want to tell a player right away because you don't want to forget it later on, or you don't want to kind of play it down later on, you do it right there on the field, and you carry it out. And if the relationship is a positive one, which I really believe it is, because otherwise he wouldn't do it, so clearly out there in public, then he's okay with that. He's okay with that. You know, whatever the topic was, whatever they had to discuss, I think it's all right as long as both of them, they respect each other and they talk it out. Why not?
Just to put that quote into context, I do it for the cameras, my ego. It was obviously tongue in cheek. When he was asked about it ahead of the game this week,
and
he said, "Oh no, I want to make everything about me. It's all about my ego. It's all about me being in front of the cameras." Obviously, he didn't mean it, but that was the way he kind of retorted to the journalists.
I don't know this. I personally think that's the kind of thing he would do in the training ground.
Right.
I think he would, when there's no cameras. I think if he see, because the one thing this guy has done at every club he's been at, he sets standards for the way they play. Right. The standard, the bar for players coming in or staying in the team is up there. And that's not just what you see in a weekend or a midweek. That's set. That tone is always set in pre-season all the way through at training. And I think what we saw there is something they would be doing in training as well, when he's seen things that he doesn't like.
But does he need to do it so publicly? Could he not have done it down the tunnel in the dressing room?
We have to understand, in this very woke period we're in, where everybody gets upset with the merest and slightest little thing. In fact, a lot of people in this life, they wake up in the morning and they're looking to be offended. This is grown men we're talking about in the men's game, right? This is one of the best coaches that has ever graced the game. That's fact, right? He doesn't get to where he's got by doing stuff that the players don't accept. And so this is nothing more than, I think, and it's only my opinion, that people saying, this is for the cameras, this is for this. I think this is the type of thing that Guardiola and the best coaches are doing day in, day out in the training ground when they're not seeing what they want. The fact that it was on the field and there's a camera there, I think it was very spur of the moment.
To that point, this is exactly the type of thing that happens on the training ground, or... To your point, you would wait till you get back to your dressing room before you have that conversation. But this isn't entirely new to Pep Guardiola. Yeah. I remember Joshua Kimmich, when he was just coming through at Bayern Munich, Guardiola having just as animated a conversation with him on the park immediately after a game. And he said almost word for word what Jürgen was just saying is because I love the kid and I think highly of him. And it was all dependent on how Joshua Kimmich received it. And now Joshua Kimmich went on to become one of the best midfielders on the planet. So you don't discount that interaction that I believe that Pep Guardiola had, or the interaction. Similarly, what comes of this is what Jack Grealish makes of it. He takes it as it was meant, and if that relationship between Grealish and Guardiola is as strong as Jürgen is suggesting, I think Grealish is the better player for it. But this is outside of the norm, particularly in English football, but not for
Grealish has already accepted this year that he has dipped below the standards. And
so how will this help him raise those standards, being embarrassed in front of...
He's not embarrassed. It's not embarrassing. It's not embarrassing. The manager, he did something on the field that his manager wanted him to do differently. Right? Now, when a manager gets back to the dressing room, there's probably, including subs, there's probably 15 players he wants to tell different things. Right. So it was fresh in his mind. And he's basically explaining what he wanted and what he didn't get. Now, Guardiola has this season has stated publicly that Jack Grealish needs to slightly up his game, or needs to up his game, because he hasn't performed as well as he did last year, where he was absolutely terrific. But Doku's come in and Grealish had injuries at the start of this. Look, we all know Jack Grealish had a very good summer. He enjoyed himself. He partied. Then he had the injuries. Then he's had a stop-start season. This guy is, and we've heard him interviewed, is one of the most down-to-earth Grealish that is, guys, that he understands it is not a problem. And if you think a player is going to go away and sulk at a club like Man City over something like this, you're going to be mistaken, because all Grealish is thinking about is, how can I get in this team regular to play for the rest of the season and possibly win the Champions League again, because that could happen? How do I get in the team? And it's not sulking because the manager calls you out.
Right.
It's just by playing better and training harder. And that's what we'll see.
Manchester City, despite their drop-off this season, could still once again do the treble, couldn't they, in the Champions League, Premier League and the FA Cup as well. Their semi-final will be live on ESPN+ as they take on Chelsea. What a game that'll be at Wembley. Now, that game is live at 12:15 Eastern, and then 24 hours later, Craig Wynn is full Coventry kit as they take on at Manchester United. Tomorrow we'll be talking about Aston Villa in action against Manchester City. Also Arsenal, isn't it, against Luton.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Jürgen Klinsmann with us. Of course, it's an incredible story. Xavi Alonso's first full season, Jürgen. It's very possible that they could pull off the treble. Speaking to your friends in Germany, what has he done? What has been the secret to his success?
Well, obviously, the work that he's doing on the training ground, the way he kind of got the entire team believing what he tells them, the whole club believes in his approach, and the continuity, the way he is working, and he has the team play. You know, he has them play very, very positive football, very attacking-minded football, full of energy. And one thing certainly is a bit of his trademark this season is a never give up mentality that he gave his team. They turned games around. I don't know how many games Bayer Leverkusen turned around in the last 3 to 5 minutes or in stoppage time. It's insane. And this is all has to do with his personality, with his character, with his energy. A little bit similar to Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool. And that's why things going so well for Bayer Leverkusen. They're going to win the title in the Bundesliga, and which is good for the Bundesliga because, I mean, Bayern Munich, I don't know, 10 years in a row, 11 years in a row, it's good. You know, give somebody else the trophy here and there. and now they're also in the semi-final, obviously, for the German Cup. The German Cup is like the FA Cup. It's a big deal in Germany. And the surprise is that there were two second division teams in the semi-final and one third division team with Saarbrücken, who today obviously lost against Kaiserslautern. But having Kaiserslautern and Düsseldorf now being the remaining other two teams, it's also a little bit of a sign of what's going on in Germany. The German second Bundesliga, I think, has the fourth most average spectators of all the top leagues in Europe. They have 30,000 average, the second division in Germany, with teams like Kaiserslautern, Hertha Berlin, Düsseldorf, Nürnberg, Hamburg, and so on. So it's not a surprise that actually Düsseldorf now is in the semifinal against Leverkusen, and Leverkusen is the only first division team in the semifinal. But now they have the big chance. Obviously, they are the big favorites to beat Düsseldorf there tomorrow, to go there and go for the double, the two trophies, or even, you know, if they add if they add the Europa League to it, then it's an unbelievable season for Bayer Leverkusen and Xabi Alonso.
Jürgen, it's the first. Sorry, this is the first time we've had you on, Jürgen, since Xabi Alonso said that he's going to stay at Bayer Leverkusen. Do you agree with that decision?
Absolutely, 1,000%. I think, you know, he just started a very exciting project there in Leverkusen. They give him all he needs. You know, he has all the support from the club, from the area, the environment, the city, and the fans. And it's a very good team. It's a team that, you know, now has 3-4 players in the German national team going to the European Championship, has high quality. And then he's going to play a Champions League season with Bayer Leverkusen next year, where he can prove a point also for him personally as a manager. And as we've discussed before, you know, if he goes now, let him go to Bayern Munich or to Liverpool or you know, whenever Carlo Ancelotti decides to step out of Real Madrid, go to Madrid. There's nothing to win right now there for him. Mm. You know, there's everything to win for him at Bayer Leverkusen. Prove a point next year, carry them to the next level, you know, keep it exciting. He has the players fully behind him, he has the club fully behind him. I think it's the absolute right decision. All the other teams, they will come back in a couple of years' time. I don't see a problem because he's one of the most talented coaches out there in world football.
He obviously doesn't feel that the time is quite right, or he's quite... Although he's going to win a Bundesliga, barring a disaster, he obviously feels that he's got a lot more to learn before he steps in. Now, Leverkusen are a big club, right? But it's not Liverpool, it's not Bayern Munich, and it's not one of these. So, you know, sometimes you take a risk because next year you get some injuries or you lose some players, the signings don't work out. And, you know, there's always a risk to that, not stepping into another job. But it's a calculated one that he feels is the right one for him. And you can't argue with that. And in terms of the team, you know, we saw Andrić there and playing for Germany and Leverkusen. You know, players like him and the signing of Xhaka and how he's found the best positioning to get a team of players around Florian Wirtz. And let's not forget, while Bayern Munich have had, you know, the most expensive signing in their history, Harry Kane, terrific player up front, they lost their best striker, Boniface, and have done for months now. All right, they've got Patrick Schick, who's a very experienced player. But they lost a guy who was absolutely flying. So, whatever, and obviously Jürgen mentioned the amount of comebacks they've had, but whoever he's been able to put in the team, they've been able to do a job. In contrast to that, to what we saw at the weekend in the Allianz Arena, that was a shocker.
It was a shocker, Jürgen. And ever since Thomas Tuchel announced that he'd be leaving, there hasn't been any sort of response from the Bayern players. So you take a look with hindsight. Should they just have let him go and brought someone in, an interim, someone who can get the players on side between now and the end of the season, given the flat displays we've seen continuously from Bayern?
No, I think it's absolutely right to finish off the season with Thomas as the head coach, as the manager. Bayern Munich, once things go don't go as expected, is a very, very difficult spot for any manager out there. So there's a, it is difficult. It is frustrating. The expectations are the highest in that club. They expect you to get the German championship automatically, the German Cup. And on top of that, you got to deliver the Champions League every now and then. So it was the right decision to go to the end. Now it will be interesting to see what is the reaction of the team against Arsenal in the Champions League. Because it's still, you know, if you look at that team and you look at that roster, they're still capable to win the Champions League. Even if it's overall, it's so far a disappointing season with Bayer Leverkusen running away and winning, being unbeaten the whole season, basically. So this will be a nail biter for all Bayern Munich fans, the game against Arsenal.
Here's the problem. Right, you got Kim on the bench who's just lost his form, it would seem, after, you know, been absolutely brilliant in Napoli. You had Harry Kane, who's been brilliant in Germany, but he had a real off day at the weekend.
Yes.
He missed two sitters with his head before he scored one that was chopped off for offside. But you're not going to win the Champions League with that back four. You got Davies, who's likely to be leaving. You got Kimmich, who doesn't want to play right back anymore, wants to play in the midfield, but we know that's been an ongoing tug of war because Thomas Tuchel wanted Paulinho and wanted others to come in and play, and Goretzka hasn't had great form. And then you've got De Ligt and Dier. There is not a hope in hell that I don't personally think they'll beat Arsenal. There's not a hope in hell you're going to win this competition with some of the teams with the pace they've got. I mean, that back four against Arsenal, those two centre-halves, they're going to have to play in the edge of their own box because they can't run. I mean, De Ligt's the quickest of the two, and he ain't quick. So anybody with any pace, and Arsenal are not the quickest through the middle, but they're quick in the wide areas. Anybody with any pace is going to rip that back four, particularly those two centre-halves, to pieces. So unless he goes back to the and I know Upamecano hasn't been playing well, but my God, you're not telling me Kim is not whatever. If Kim's having a bad season, that's still better than an Eric Dier great season.
Yeah.
That's how I'm looking at this. And for some reason, I'm not saying he hasn't been playing his best. He's not. But when Eric Dier is the answer at centre-half for Bayern Munich, that's problematic. And so unless that changes between now and the Arsenal game, that back line, they've got no chance. They've got a slim chance.
But it's going to be an intriguing tie in the first leg, of course, next week. One last thing on Bayern, Jürgen. You take a look at the odds for the next manager as someone who's sat in the hot seat. What is it about managing this club, which is so intense?
It's the expectations, the daily expectations from everyone working at the club. Obviously, your bosses, you know, the management above you, and the fans. It's just if you don't win your game on the weekend or midweek, you know, the next days will be miserable at the training ground. They expect you to win every game. They expect you to win every title because they set the standards so high over the last 30, 40 years, this club. It is just basically an automatic that you as a manager going in there, you just have to deliver. You have to deliver. And sometimes it gets very politically and it's part of it. And the only thing that really helps you if you have some arguments there is win your games, but really win your games almost every game.
Jürgen, before we let you go, I've got to get your reflections on the watch party that we saw. Of course, you went to Atlanta with Seb. How was it for you?
Sebastian, we had a fantastic time. It was a great watch party there for the Bundesliga Classico there. I was surprised there were a lot of German fans actually there in Atlanta. And there were also a lot of fans not necessarily being Bayern Munich or Dortmund fans, which surprised me as well. No, it was a really cool event.
Oh, fantastic, Jürgen. Thank you very much. Much appreciated. Just a reminder, of course, the Bundesliga continues here on ESPN. Meanwhile, over on the website, they've ranked the top 10 young players in the world. Florian Wirtz is there, Musiala.
It says 39 there.
Sorry?
39 best.
What a random number. There we go. Yes, anyway.
39, it's... not 40.
Yes, I know.
Not 10. Not 50.
Yeah, okay, maybe. So, Musiala's there.
I'll tell you what, some weird people working
Wirtz is there. Bellingham is number one. That's where I was getting. Top 39. You should do top 39 power rankings.
Good luck with
that. That's it. Tommy's top 25 teams.
Exactly. The action then continues. Bayern Munich away against Heidenheim. By Leverkusen away against Union Berlin. We'll, of course, be covering those games on ESPN+. There's Stevie.
What's going on here?
He was rubbing his belly laughing. Like Santa. If you want to see why, be sure to go over to our YouTube channel. More Stevie stories in our extra time today, I believe. Big game, of course, this weekend. There's no domestic action in the league for Spain. However, there is the Copa del Rey final. Athletic Club taking on Mallorca. That game live from Seville at 3:30 Eastern on ESPN+. And that is it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. But fear not.
Will you sleep easy tonight?
More chance to hear from Craig.
I'll talk less tomorrow.
Extra time is next alongside Craig. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time.
It's amazing, this place, isn't it?
Craig is here.
It's amazing.
Shaka is here.
You know, some days I come in, right, a bit under the weather.
Right.
Oh, you didn't say much today. You didn't say much today. You must be in a mood.
Right, well, normally that's justified, actually, to be fair.
All right, that's every day.
Yes.
This job's about talking, right?
Yes.
Today I'm talking, he's more than I'm talking.
I just say you're talking a lot.
I mean, I'm seriously, I am befuddled and bemused. Which way you want me to go here?
Oh, dear me. Should we do the Stevie story first?
Yeah.
There was a meeting today, which me and Craig didn't attend, but you did.
Big meeting.
Anyway, that was the thing, because when we got the email yesterday, the email hadn't even dropped through in my ESPN email, and I had hit the decline button.
Shaka being a good worker, a good professional.
Corporate man.
Exactly.
Yes.
However, one other gentleman signed on.
I don't know what Stevie was even doing on the meeting.
I have to admit, I was shocked to see Stevie on there.
Right. Yes.
But Stevie, being Stevie,
yes,
not best with technology, leaves his video and mic on.
Right, dangerous.
All right.
Dangerous.
Some people do that during big meetings. But as often happens during these Zoom meetings, you have another device on the side.
Right.
as some form of distraction during said meeting. Stevie pulls up YouTube and is watching Jurgen Klopp interviews with the volume on while his video and volume are on this big, important work meeting.
Lovely.
So it's coming all the way through.
Everybody heard it.
Everybody knows.
But how did they know it was Stevie?
Because, like, you know when yours is the main voice, your box kind of lights up.
Your box pops up.
Or you come front to the screen.
The light flashes.
So every time, the bosses would take a little breather just to catch their breath, and then up would pop Stevie. First of all, he's sitting back in his chair, cup of tea.
Has he got his dressing gown on?
No. Jürgen Klopp on in the background.
Yes.
Honestly, it was but now I'm texting Stevie.
Yeah.
I'm like, Stevie, mute your mic at least. No, he's using his phone for other things.
Yeah, of course.
At this point.
And he had to be called out eventually.
The bosses had to call him out.
Brilliant.
Stevie, can you mute your mic, please?
And did he manage to do that?
He didn't manage to mute
his mic. I have to say, it is rather amazing. This could have taken several turns a lot worse.
Most definitely.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah,
and then, anyway,
true.
If we are wondering why... why Shaka logged on?
Right,
it's obvious.
Oh, because the meeting was about how to book vacations.
The meeting was about holiday time.
Yeah, so
and
therefore,
no man,
the king of
at
holidays.
This company, and I don't want to belittle his grafting ability.
Okay, that's why he's getting.
No man.
Yeah.
Knows vacation time off better than him.
Yeah, most definitely.
Factual.
Yeah, and being at the meeting, that's a day. Take that off.
But anyway.
Right, to the questions. What is one thing you miss doing during your playing days, Craig?
Miss doing? I don't miss playing. I was more than ready to finish when I finished. Body was wrecked. The one thing I miss, if I was to miss anything, is the camaraderie in the dressing room.
Right.
You know, when I left Chelsea after 10 years, it was quite... It was quite emotional to leave... Not so much the club. When I walked out of that dressing room, when I went to get my boots and all my stuff, and I walked out, I'd been with most of those guys, not them all, but I'd been with them a decade. Some of them I'd came through the youth team with. And I never, ever felt I would get that rapport again. But I was wrong, because I walked into an even better dressing room at Celtic. And the fun, as well as the success we had, but the fun we had.
Yeah.
Walking in, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a privilege to go in the morning and get stick and give it back and just have all that. But that, you can never really... You know, with 20-odd guys, you can never really replicate that.
That seems to be something that everybody tells me when we're married. Yeah. But it's not necessarily what happens on the pitch. It's the camaraderie between everybody off.
And I tend to rely on that. You rely on that understanding between players. And that's a big part. That's a big part of successful teams. You are able to relate with each other. And I know not everybody gets along all the time. There's a mutual understanding. And you have a lot of fun on and off the park. And yeah, that's the part that I think most players would say they miss. You know, I mean, I didn't have to retire through injury. You know, so it was my own decision. And so playing was not, it become tough to the end. You know? But that is the one part of the game that, you really do miss.
Do you know when you know you've got a good dressing room, when you can have that friendship and banter and camaraderie and deal with the pressure that you know is coming up every weekend, and yet still have a massive rock? If it's needed.
Okay.
I don't mean just a fight for the sake. I mean, still have on a Saturday or in training, you could fall out with two or three of the guys that you go for a drink with, and it's heated, and I'm not very often it was physical, but it's verbal, but yet it makes you stronger.
Right.
And then you put that to the side because everybody's friends and everybody, that's telling you that everybody wants the same. It's when you don't get upset and you just let things brush over that you start thinking, does he really care?
Does he care?
So when you can have that, and there's always, we didn't have it at Celtic, we did in the end when Berkovic and one or two others come in. There are always some players when push comes to shove, they think you're, not me, but as a group, you don't like them. But luckily, most of the time we had was, you know, guys going, you know, nose to nose with each other, shouting, and then it was gone.
You know, the other thing, you hear a lot of times in dressing rooms, there are different cliques.
Yes.
For whatever reason. And when you have a big group that go all together and have that camaraderie, you don't find those cliques.
Okay.
Because that comes with, you know, spending social time together. And probably the best example of that for me was my time at Newcastle. We'd go out quite a lot, but it'd be 30 of us. It would be the young players through to the most senior pros.
Yes.
And nobody was bigger or better than the other person. Everybody would get steak, everybody would give steak. It really was, and so it was great. So then when you have young players coming through, because they'd been a part
of... They feel
accepted. They'd been a part of this, of our social group, so it was easier for them to find their footing on the pitch.
You know when we say the foreign players came into, say, English football? When the foreign could be wherever in the world, or Italy, but it's from these big leagues in Europe, and they were definitely more professional, and they definitely had a different view of how to train and how to look after yourself after training, which is across the board now. Everybody's doing it now. But I remember when Zolas and Viales and all these guys came, it was all about gym and doing this before. So they were kind of ahead of it, but they're also smarter in a way than the British player. Because, I'll give you an example. The British guys, for the most, and we used to all go out as a group, but every now and again, the British guys would be out in Glasgow and we'd be the disgrace.
Right.
Because you lost on the Saturday, how can you be out in the nightclub and look at you drinking and blah, blah, blah. They're also doing it. But they're up at Big Mark Reaper's house.
Right.
The Dane. There's Wieghorst and Larsen and Blinker and they're all... And they're smoking cigarettes and they're drinking and they're doing all that. But they're clever about it.
Right.
They're having a good time.
They're not in the gutter.
They're not in the gutter in Socky Hall Street with a doner kebab over their face. With some supporter looking at them going, you're playing in 3 days. These guys, so it's a different culture. They used to go out as well, not as often as us, because they always did it a little bit more discreetly.
Right,
the British guys, for the most part, they don't even know what the word...
Discretion wasn't your strong point. Discretion wasn't yours.
Discreet is not in the dictionary when it comes to the 1990s night out.
Yes.
He'll know that better than anybody.
There we go. Wow. This is the first question.
Have I just thrown Reaper and Vika? I hope so. Danish boys.
Ask Shaka how Newcastle drew that game. Ridiculous. Seriously, though, why is tugging wrestling in the box called so inconsistently? It was a pen for me, but I've seen similar incidents not given.
I'll be honest, I can't think of anything that bad not given. I thought it was just dumb.
It was a layup.
It was really poor. And as I said during the show, I just felt in so many ways, it kind of summed Newcastle's season up. Dominate the game almost from beginning to end. Yes, Everton had a little bit of a spell. You don't make your chances count, and then all of a sudden you give up of all the penalties to give up. That and I just thought.
I'll tell you how dumb it is. Is, you know, when you're playing now, you must think, you have to second guess yourself now because everyone's got VAR.
Yeah, everyone's. Yeah.
So the stuff, being a goalkeeper, but the stuff we used to do, and, you know, you're tugging shirts and tripping people up, or, you know, somebody's making a forward run from midfield and they've slightly got the other side of me and the centre halves have split. I stick my foot out and trip him up. The ref's not even going to see it. The line, the assistant, he's looking for offside. The referees came up with player, trip him up, all that sort of stuff. You just can't do it now.
No. Nope.
So when you're doing this pulling in the box and wrestling in the box, how the hell you think, unless you've got one of these referees that, well, it has happened, you know, when they just don't want to see it, you're just, in the main, you're not going to get away with it.
Jack, which trio of young players is more promising? Jude Bellingham, Camavinga, Endrick for Real Madrid, or Pedri, Gavi and Yamin Lamal for Barcelona?
I'd have to go with Jude, Camavinga, Endrick. From what we've seen so far, and while, yeah, Endrick is a new entity to this, you can't question Jude and Camavinga and what they've given so far. Don't get me wrong, the other three outstanding, but I just feel as a body of work, three are...
What age is Vinicius? Do we know off the top of my head? I can't know off the top of my
20, him.
23. I'm going to go for 23.
21.
No, he's not 20. He's not 23. Hold on. I'm getting
silenced.
Pizza? pepperoni. I think he's 20. Is he 20?
Okay, right, what's the point?
I don't know.
Let's go. I'll look it up. I'll look it up. Nobody will notice.
Right, why would he not be on that list? Oh, I tell you what.
He's 23.
Gonna... Is he 23?
Yes.
I knew he was 23.
Right. We'll edit that bit out.
Why don't I bring that up?
Question for Craig. Do you still feel Manchester City will beat the informed Real Madrid side?
Inform.
Yeah, they're doing well late, aren't they?
I'm not as convinced as I was last year.
Yeah.
Last year it was a blowaway. Was it last year?
Yeah, it was.
Don't want to get anything else wrong.
Yes.
You know, we get hauled before some Zoom meeting again. I have to decline.
Yes, it was last year.
I wouldn't be as cut because last year they were not only were they great going forward, for the most part defensively they were rock solid. They're sort of neither of those at the moment. They're somewhere in the middle, and I think that gives Real Madrid a pathway over two legs. I still think it's a 60-40 call on Man City's favour, but not a given, I would say.
Let's do quick hits on this one. Will Eddie Howe be managing Newcastle next season?
Yes.
We talked about that on the show, didn't we?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, there's an echo.
Yes. Does Pochettino manage Chelsea next season?
Yes.
I mean, we had the table up earlier on the show. Is it 11th or 12th?
Yeah, 11th.
Yes.
I mean, I suppose there's the FA Cup could be... They got Man City in the semi, I think.
Yes.
I'm hedging my bets.
Yes, they are, yes. Yes.
I'm going to say, all right, yes.
Yes. Shaka, being on the show for three consecutive days, does that mean there's a vacation around the corner?
Was you scheduled to be on the show for 3 days, or was it just that somebody?
Yeah.
No, he scheduled it.
I didn't never turn up.
I'm not in a position to confirm or deny whether there may be a holiday or two coming up.
Wow. That's right.
Yeah, but you're only just back.
Yeah, you went back. Carnival. Phoned in sick for a month.
You came back with a disease.
I was sick leave.
That was sick leave. It doesn't count.
I won't go there. See, you came back with something.
Yeah. No.
I should have logged into the meeting.
Steve's not available for a couple of days. He's having his colonoscopy. Good luck to that doctor.
Tell you what.
It must be a better way to earn a living.
Talk about life choices.
I'll spare you the details. But whoever's doing that, they must be wearing a space suit. an oxygen vest. You know, in the room. Do you know when they have the big, the clear, what is it that? Like, not, you know, the clear film?
Yes.
You bust through the room and it's almost like airtight.
Like a horror movie.
Yeah, and you come in and like somebody's talking to them from a control room.
Right, Mr. Nicol.
Right. I tell you what, whatever the.
Don't press the red button.
Whatever the pain that particular person to do that for him tomorrow, it's not enough.
Beautiful.
Not enough money in the world that person is entitled to.
Final question. We were talking about ice cream.
It's not about colonoscopies, is it?
No, it's not about colonoscopies. Shaka, have you ever tried black pepper vanilla ice cream?
Black pepper vanilla? No. Oh.
Yeah. There we go. Because yesterday you were championing your cherry goat's cheese.
Goat's milk and cherry, yeah.
And Mario was getting very excited about something.
I tell you what.
Chocolate and peanut butter, he was.
Yes, exactly.
I tell you what, you can trough you can.
You can trough.
You can trough. You've always got, every time I come in, you're having a nose bug.
I'm going on a diet.
Are you, Shank?
Yeah.
Wow. Ready for your next vacation?
Well, you know.
Do you think you need to go on a diet?
Right, that's it. We're done. Thank you very much.
Hold on. Where can I get that black pepper and thingamabobby vanilla? I forgot to ask that.
Don will be with us. Are you here tomorrow?
Yeah, I am here tomorrow.
Are you here as well, you?
Present.
Oh, God.